Masechet Baba Masiha, Daf Samech Dalid. We were in the middle of a series of three laws by Rav Nachman, and we saw two of them. This is the third one. V'amar Rav Nachman, Hayman de ozif pishite mechavre v'ashkach betufayna, ibichdesh ada to'a michayav lahadurele, v'ilav matana ba'amahu diyahiv le. This one is not about interest, but it is about loans. So let's say I borrow money from you, and I'm borrowing $1,000, and you give me a wad of 20s. Okay, I put it in my pocket, and then the next day I go and I find that there's more than $1,000 there. So now what's going on? Well, it depends. Let's say if it's an amount that is likely to be just a mistake in counting, like let's say there's an extra 20 there. So then it's probable that you were counting them out and you counted one extra. That happens often. Or let's say with coins, if you're counting out coins, you might count the coins by fives. And so if it's five extra, then it's likely to be a mistake. And then I have to return it to you. However, if it's not likely to be a mistake of counting, then I can assume it's a gift, right? You give me like three extra dollars. It's 20s and then, you know, three singles, right? Or if it's coins, it's just three extra coins, not an amount that would be a normal mistake of counting. In that case, I can assume it's a gift. I'm borrowing from you, and you gave me a gift also. This is not a problem of interest, because interest would only be the other way around if the borrower is giving extra money back to the lender. Okay, so that's his rule. That's how you tell if something is a mistake or a gift. If it's a mistake, I have to return it. If it's a gift, I can keep it. So what would be an example of something that's likely to be a mistake? If it's off by five or off by ten, so since people normally count by fives or tens, then that's likely to be a mistake. Amar le Rav Acha bered Rav le Rav Ashe. V'inish tekifa hu delay himatana mai. And so now the question is to Rav Ashe, what if the person giving the money is a stingy person who generally would not give an extra gift? See, if you're giving a loan, let's say you're giving a loan to a poor person. So, okay, he needs a loan. You know what? I'm going to add a little extra just as a gift. So many people are generous and they would do that. But if you know this person that's giving the loan is a tightwad and wouldn't give a gift, what about then? But if it's, you know, it's off like $3, so what do you assume? So he says, you could still keep it, because maybe what happened is on some previous occasion, they made some previous deal, this lender stole money from the borrower, and he feels bad about it, he wants to make teshuvah, but the lender is embarrassed to come to the borrower and say, listen, one time, you know, I shortchanged you, I stole money from you. It's embarrassing to come and have to admit that. But he does want to return it. So you know what he does? In the next transaction, he's giving a loan, he gives the $1,000, and he adds in a few dollars that was from some other time that he stole. And that's what you can assume. Yeah, he's a stingy guy. He wouldn't give a gift, but he would return stolen money. Detanya, ha-gozer t'chaberov evliya lo b'cheshbon yasa. We have a braita that counts as returning. Although, you know, if to make teshuvah, you have to say sorry, you have to return it. And so in normal case, you say, here, I stole this from you, I'm returning it. But the braita teaches that even if you include this money within a different payment, that's sufficient. That's called returning the stolen money, and you fulfilled your obligation to return. Now, follow-up question to Rav Ashe. What if it's a stingy person, and it's a person that comes from out of town, and I never did business with that person, so it's impossible to say that he is including money that's from a previous deal when he stole from me, that he's returning stolen money. I never did business with him. He's from out of town. So what about in that case, right? And if it's off just like $3, so then should I assume it's a mistake? But it's not the kind of number that you would make a mistake in counting. And he's a stingy guy. And I never did business with him before. So what do you do in that case? We can still assume it's a return of stolen money of someone else. There's a third party. There's another guy there that one time he stole money from me. He feels bad about it, but he's embarrassed to come come and return to me the money. He sees this guy from out of town, and he notices that this guy is going to lend me money. Maybe he overhears that I ask him, hey, can you lend me $1,000? So that guy that stole from me once before will go to the lender and says, listen, do me a favor. Take this extra $3. I shortchanged him one time. I owe him $3. Just put this in with the loan. And that guy says, okay, I'll do that. So then I can also assume that this is a return of stolen money and I can keep that money. Next, Amar Rav Kahana. Havaya tivna bishilhe pirkei derav. Vushma'it dekamre kare kare. Velayadane mai kamar. Bata dekamrav amri lehu mai kare kare dekamarav. Okay, fun story. Rav Kahana says, I was sitting in the back of Rav's study house, of his lecture, Pirka. Pirka, from the word perek, to mean a section, is the big lecture that the great rabbis would give everybody would come, all the colleagues and students and lay people would come to hear the Pirka. These were on special occasions, like on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And Rav Kahana was sitting there in the back. Now, when you have a large group, it's hard to hear from the back. Generally, in the Pirka, the rabbi himself would speak quietly in the front, and he would have a loudspeaker. He would have another person who would listen to what the rabbi said, and he would announce it out loud, because it wasn't considered honorable for the rabbi to have to shout. So you get the guy who has a loud voice to repeat it. But in any case, Rav Kahana was in the back, and even with that, he couldn't make out all the words. All he could make out was kare, kare, kare like kara. Is a gourd. It's a plural of gourd, right? Here's an example of a bottle gourd. And here Rav saying something about gourds, but he couldn't make out the context. And so after Rav finished the lecture, Rav Kahana went to the people in the front and said, what was that? What was he saying about gourds? And they said, Amru li, Hachi ka'amarav, hai man de'ahiv zuze ligina'a akare, v'ka'az le'asara kare b'ne zarta, v'amar le'ahiv nalach b'ne garmida, itnehu share, letnehu asur. This is what Rav was saying, that if someone pays money up front for gourds, when the price of gourds is 10 gourds that are a length span, that's from the pinky to the end of the thumb, right? 10 gourds of this length go for 1 dinar. That's the price. And then the seller says, listen, if you want, we'll do that now. You give me the money now, I'll give you 10 gourds at the current market price that are this big. But if you give me the money now and are willing to wait to collect your goods, then come back next week, I'll give you gourds that are 1 amma. That's much bigger, from the elbow to the tip of the finger. So this is a payment for an advanced sale, buying futures. And as we saw yesterday, the basic rule is, if he has those big gourds in stock, that's okay, right? Because he's making the sale now, and I can give you big gourds. I can give you a discount. I can give you big gourds if I want. That's totally permitted. I can charge you whatever I want at a time of a sale, as long as I have them to deliver. So even if I don't actually deliver them to you, I'm holding on to them, but that's sufficient. And even if you don't pull them or anything, the fact that I took the money and I'm setting these aside here, these are your gourds, even if it's not exactly these. Since I have them in stock, we can consider that to be a sale, and it doesn't look like interest. So that's permitted. However, if I don't have those gourds in stock, I only have little gourds, but the other ones are coming in, or these gourds are going to grow, but I don't actually have them, then it's prohibited, because then you are getting benefit from waiting. And that's the definition of interest, getting extra benefit. I get to use your money in the meantime, and you don't get your gourds until later on, but you get a benefit of getting bigger gourds. Since I don't have them in stock, this looks like interest. Still is not deoraita, because it's a sale, not a loan, but nevertheless, it looks like interest, so it's prohibited. That is what Rav was saying in the Pirka. Now we ask about this Pishita, isn't this obvious? Like, this follows the basic principles that we know already. I might have thought, since they're going to increase on their own, these gurs that are small, that are still growing, and he wants to let them keep growing, since they're going to grow automatically on their own, the gardener doesn't have to do anything, he's not waiting for a shipment to come in, he owns these gurs that are small, they're going to grow, so I might think that it would be permitted. It's as if he has them, because just leave them for another week or two and they'll grow to a bigger size. So I might have thought it's okay. And that's why Rav was teaching that, no, it's not good. If they have to actually have them in the big size right now in stock. And then you could say, listen, I'll deliver them to you later. I'll give the big ones if you want to wait, or the little ones now. That's permitted if they're actually big now. But if they're small now, even though they're automatically going to grow, that's not called that you have them. That's called that you're going to only get them later on. Good. Keman. Now, this statement of Rav, what Tana is he following? Ki hai Tana de Tanya. Ha'olech l'chalobet izav l'gzoz et rechela v'redot et kavarto. Mesa'o chaverov amar lo, ma she'izai cholbot machur lecha, ma she'rechelai gozizot machur lecha, ma she'kavati roda machur lecha mutar. Here we have a braita. Someone is going to milk his goats or shear his sheep or take the honey out of his hives. He says, I'm on my way, I'm going to go do this over the next few days. And someone finds him and the farmer says, listen, I'll make you a deal. Whatever, I don't know exactly how much milk I'm going to get from the goats, but whatever it is, I'll sell to you at a fixed price, right? $100. What do you want? Or to shear the sheep. I don't know. Again, they're not sheared yet. So the wool, I mean, exists on the sheep, but it's not sheared yet. So I don't know how much it's going to be. It might be more. It might be less. But I'd rather have the safety of knowing I have $100 and you'll get more if it's more, less if it's less. Or the same thing with honey. It's not extracted yet. And so I'm going to sell it to you now. That is permitted. The reason this is permitted is because even though it doesn't exist, I mean, it exists kind of in potential, but it's not harvested yet, it's not taken yet. Even though it doesn't exist as is just yet, this is permitted because the buyer is taking a risk. It could be that he'll get more than he bargained for, but it may be that he'll get less than he bargained for. So this is not called interest, even if he ends up getting more, because potentially he could have gotten less. So he is paying up front to take upon himself the risk of potential gain or potential loss. Since there is potential loss, so he deserves to have a lower price for the potential gain. They even each other out. And so therefore, this is not called a benefit for paying up front because he's taking a risk either way. That's the first half. Aval im amar lo ma she'izai cholvot kach ve'kach machur lecha, ma she'rechelai gozot kach ve'kach machur lecha, ma she'kavarati roda kach ve'kach machur lecha asur, v'af agav de'mela ka rabu, kevan de'letnu ba'hi sha'ata asur. However, if in a similar case, the farmer says, listen, I'm going to go and be milking my cows soon, and I'll sell it to you from now, right? And I'll give you a good price because you're paying me early on, even though I don't have the milk yet. The milk inside the cow is not called milk. And so I'll sell it to you this month. I'll sell you 10 gallons at this price. And you fix a price for a fixed amount. Or I'll sell you this amount of wool once I shear it, but you'll pay me up front. I'll give you a good deal. Or this amount of honey. In these cases, it's prohibited. And even though these are things that are automatically going to come, I mean, the goats are there. They have milk in them, right? The sheep are there. They have a wool on them. And the honeycombs have honey in them. So even though it's automatically going to grow and it's there and they continue to grow and have more and more milk and more sheep and all that. But since I don't have it, the farmer doesn't have it ready at that time, so that is prohibited. You see, the difference between the Resha and the Sefa is that in the Resha is permitted because he's getting a good price up front, but taking a risk of possible loss because he doesn't know exactly how much he's going to get. So to get a discount up front for a risk, that's okay. But in the sefa, the buyer is not taking upon himself any risk. He's only getting a benefit of a discounted price for paying early. That's no good. You're paying early and getting more afterwards and not taking any risk. It's only a benefit so you're getting full benefit for paying early. So that is interest. So that's the difference. Okay, how does this relate to what we said before? Well, Rav said over here that even though the gourds are there, they're on the tree, they're growing, and they're automatically going to grow into big ones, still, you don't have big ones in that right now, and therefore you cannot make a forward sale. Same thing, that's similar to the sefa. Right, where the milk is there, the wool is there, and they're going to grow on their own. They're going to get bigger automatically. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to make a sale where there's no, unless you're taking risk. That's okay. You can get a discount for risk. But in this case, and in the Rav's case, there was no discount. There's no risk. He's only paying for something that doesn't yet exist. And even though just waiting, it'll automatically happen. It's not like he has to go manufacture it or buy it from a manufacturer. He just has to wait and it automatically grows on its own. Nevertheless, it's prohibited. So you see, Rav follows this baraita. Ika d'amre amar Rava. Now, another alternative discussion with the same baraita. And this is now not Rav's lecture, but rather Rava who said the opposite. He said, Kevan de memela karabu shapir dame. He said, if something is growing automatically, that's permitted. So if I am selling gourds and say, listen, the gourds are this big now, and you can buy it now, or if you want, you can wait and come back later and they're going to grow. And then, right, I'll give you a good price on bigger ones. That's okay because they're going to grow on their own. The farmer doesn't have to do anything. So it's like he already has them. So that's Rava, that's Rava. V'hatanya kach v'kach asur. But now we challenge Rava. Before, we brought the Braita to support Rav. But Rava says the opposite. So we challenge Rava, right? Doesn't it say in the Sefa of the Braita, even though the wool of the animal is going to grow on its own, and you're going to say, listen, I'll sell you the wool that's going to grow. I'm going to shear it in a few days, and right, I'm not, I don't have to do anything. Isn't it as if it's already there? And the answer is hatam lav mine karabu teshakle le lehai v'atacharina beduchte hacha mine karabu dehachi shakle le lehai la atacharina beduchte. So it's different with regard to the milk and the wool and the honey. They're not increasing in and of themselves. How do you know? Well, if I remove milk today, then other milk will replace it. If I remove wool, other wool will come. If I remove honey, new honey comes, right? It keeps replenishing. So you're actually not buying that which is there now. You're buying something that will be manufactured because it keeps being new milk and new wool keeps on being grown and manufactured. And so it's not this very same item that's growing. That's different from a gourd where, look, if I remove the gourd, a new gourd is not going to be come in its place until next season, but it's not going to be the same gourd. So in gourds, it's permitted. That's what Rava said. Rava says permitted because, listen, basically you're buying this very gourd. And you say, listen, the farmer says, do you want to take it now, right, or at this price, and it's only this big? Or, listen, if you want, give me the money now. And if you want, we'll just wait and you'll come back in 2 weeks and the gourd will grow. You're buying this very gourd, right? But instead of taking it now, plucking it now, you just buy it. It's still on the tree and it'll grow and then you can get a bigger one later. So you're buying the very same gourd. Whereas with milk and honey and wool, you're not buying that very wool. In a few days from now, it's already going to be new ones. It's true. It automatically grows on its own. The farmer doesn't have to do anything, but it doesn't actually exist right now. And that is the difference. Amar Abaye, share leli inish le memar le lechabre. Helach arba'azu ze achabita de chamra. Itakva birshutach. Iyakra izila birshuti. So Abaye has another similar law about buying futures. A person could say to another, here, I'm paying you 4 dinar. And I want to buy the future delivery of wine, but I'm willing to participate in the risk. If it goes bad, that's your problem. Okay, if it turns into vinegar, That's your problem. I want my money back. But regarding appreciation and depreciation, in other words, the market value of wine, as long as it stays wine and doesn't totally sour, if it goes up and down, that I'll take the benefit and I'll take the risk. It's as if in my possession. And it's not completely a sale. It's not a complete sale, because if it's a complete sale and it goes bad, then I, the buyer, should have to take all the risks. So, but it's not completely a loan, because I'm taking some of the risk if it goes down, but some of the benefit. So he says this is permitted. Challenges. Says this in this deal, me, the buyer, I am close to gain and far from loss, meaning my upside is more than my downside. Since I don't have a downside if it goes sour, you accepted all the risk for that. And so, but I get all the risk, all the upside if it goes up in value, and a little bit of the downside only if it goes down in value. So now I am benefiting from paying up front. Right, I'm paying up front, and I am getting a lot of benefit, and I'm mostly protected. I could lose, but the major loss I'm protected from, and I have what to gain. So isn't that called gaining from paying early? And that would be prohibited. And Abaye says, no, not true. Since I'm accepting upon myself both appreciation and risk of depreciation, so that's equal. He's putting going sour as a separate item. That's if it gets totally bad, that's your problem. But the market value going up or down, that's an equally likely to go up or to go down. And so therefore, since I'm assuming risk, that's permitted. I can pay up front and get, it's not a total benefit by paying up front. There is a possible benefit, but an equal possibility of loss. And therefore, that's not called benefit for paying up front. That's simply getting a discount for taking risk, which is permitted. Next Mishnah, Hamavet Chavero lo yador b'chasero chinam ve'lo yiskor mimenu b'pachot mipnei shehu ribit. Someone lends money to someone else. The lender may not reside in the borrower's courtyard for free. And also, he may not rent from him a place to stay less than the market value, because both these cases would be ribit. Even though, as we're going to see, it could be that the borrower doesn't rent out his courtyard. He's not losing anything. It's not like he has to turn away a paying customer because the malveh is staying here, or by renting that lower than the market value that he's losing out. It could be he's not losing out and he wasn't going to rent it anyway. And if it was a regular person, not in business with him, they could stay in the courtyard for free and would not have to pay. But in this case, because he is a lender, so then by getting this benefit for free, that is a form of interest, and it is not permitted. Amar Rav Yosef bar Minoy, Amar Rav Nachman, Af al pi shemru hadar b'chasar chavero shelo midaato, eino sarich lahalot lo sachar, hevahu v'dar b'chasaro, sarich lahalot lo sachar. Rav Nachman makes this clear. He says, even though, in general, there's a principle of zeh nehene, if one person benefits and the other person has no loss, then he does not have to pay. So even though in general someone who resides in someone else's courtyard without his knowledge does not have to pay for it, because he got a benefit, but the other guy had no loss. There's some empty space in his courtyard. He's not taking up any needed space or kicking anybody else out that's paying. And so therefore he can stay there and does not have to pay. However, if they're in a financial relationship where this person staying there lent him money, then he has to pay for it. He can stay there, but he has to pay the market price, so that he's not receiving benefit for free, which would look like interest. My kamash malan tanena hamavet chabero lo yado b'chasero chinam velo yiskor mimenu b'pachot mipnei shehu ribit. We ask Rav Nachman, why are you telling us this? We know this from our Mishnah. It said explicitly, someone who lends money to someone else may not stay in his courtyard for free, and also may not rent living quarters from him at less than the going rate, because that is interest. The answer is imi matnitin hava amina hanemi lebachased kaimala agrave gabrada abid lemegad aval chased la kaimala agrave gabrada la avid lemegad emala kamash malan. Says if I only had the Mishnah, I might have thought that the Mishnah is true only with regard to a courtyard that is generally rented out. This guy, he rents out his courtyard all the time. He puts it up on Airbnb, and he's always making money from people staying in his courtyard. Or it could be a person who generally rents. He doesn't have his own house over here, and so wherever he's going to stay, he needs to pay. So generally, this guy makes money, the courtyard owner, and generally the lender is paying rent. And so therefore, if he's staying there for free, it's clearly a violation, right? Because now he's staying for free. He usually would pay. The other guy is not getting paid. The borrower is not getting paid. He usually would get paid for staying there. So that's very clear that he's getting a benefit because he lent him money. But if it's a courtyard that generally he doesn't rent out. He doesn't rent out. Sometimes people come and stay, and generally they stay for free. And this guy, he's not usually a renter. He has a place. And so he's not used to rent paying for rent if he happens to stay somewhere else. So I might have thought that would be okay, because no one's expecting this lender to pay to stay in this courtyard for free. Even so, it's still not allowed. That's what Rav Nachman is adding to the Mishnah, that it's prohibited in any case, even if it's not usual and wouldn't expect this person to have to pay that person to stay in the courtyard. Still, since he's a lender, he can't get any benefit, because anyone looking at it says, oh, look, he's getting free benefit because he lent him money, and that's a form of interest. Ika de amre. That's all one version. A second version. Amarav Yosef Arminomi Amarav. Afapi shamru hada b'chasad chabero shulmei dato eno sarich la'alot lo sachad. Halveni v'dor b'chaseri sarich la'alot lo sachad. In this version, Rav Nachman says, even though, yes, it's true, the rabbi said that someone who stays in someone else's courtyard without his knowledge does not have to pay, but if he says, lend me money and you can stay in my courtyard, he makes it part of the deal, like a condition, right? If you lend me money, you can stay in my courtyard for free. In that case, that's certainly no God. He doesn't say for free. If you lend me money, you can stay in my courtyard. Since he's connecting the loan with staying in the courtyard, then certainly the lender will have to pay for his residence in the courtyard. So manda mar hilvahu kol sheken halveni, manda mar halveni aval hilvahu la. So according to the first version of Rav Nachman, that says if he had lent him money, then he cannot stay for free. All the more so if they said up front, lend me money and you can stay in my courtyard. Certainly that would be prohibited, because then it's clear that there is a connection, but it's part of the deal. However, whoever says the second version, where it's only, he only has to pay when the borrower said, lend me money and you can stay in my courtyard, thereby he linked the two, then certainly he has to pay. But if he didn't say that up front, just they made I borrowed money from you, and then afterwards you happen to stay in the courtyard, then according to that version, Rav Nachman would say, no, you don't have to pay. My ta'ama, kivan de mikara lavadata de hachiosfe leet lan ba. Why? Since at the beginning, it was not on condition of staying in the courtyard that he lent the other guy money, so there is no problem with it. So that's this version, the second version of Rav Nachman, is a lot more lenient. It's only prohibited if it's a condition of the loan. But if it's not a condition of the loan, then it's okay. Rav Yosef bar Chama takif abde de enashe de masik behu zuze ve'abid behu abidta. A story, we learned about this once before. Rav Yosef bar Chama, who is Rava's father, if someone owed him money, you know what he would do? He would go take their slaves by force and make them work for him. Even against the will of the owner, right? He owes me money, so I'm going to take this. Amar le Rava bere, my tam abid mor hachi. Now Rava asks his father, right, master, why are you doing this? Why do you think this is okay? Aren't you getting benefit from this person that owes you money? This kind of looks like interest. Amale ana kerav Nachman sibir ali. Damar Rav Nachman avda nehum kerese lashave. And Rav Yosef Bar Chama said, I follow the opinion of Rav Nachman, who said that a slave is not worth the bread of his stomach. Right? You think that I'm taking something away? While they're working for me that day, I'm also feeding them lunch. And it's all even. The amount that I'm feeding them, that costs me money, that's the same as the benefit that I get. It's actually even less. A slave is not even worth the bread of his stomach. And therefore, this is not interest. I'm not really benefiting, because after all, I'm feeding my creditors' slaves, my debtors' slaves, right? They owe me money. And so they still owe me money. And this is not called interest, because there is no monetary benefit for me in their free work. Since it's not free, I have to give them lunch. Amale emud amar Rav Nachman kegon dari abde dim raked be kube. Abde achrina mi amar, but Rava continued to challenge his father. And he said, Rav Nachman only said that regarding dari, the slave Dari, who he was a lazy guy, and he would just dance among the barrels. He was a jokester, and he didn't do any work. But a general servant, who is productive, so most of the time a slave is more productive and is a greater benefit than the food that he eats. You think Rav Nachman would say that about a general slave? No, Rav Nachman was talking about a particular slave. Who this guy, he's a clown, he just dances and sings and doesn't do any work, he's not worth the food that he eats. Amale ana ki hat Rav Daniel bar Rav Ketina, amar Rav Sivir Ali, de amar hatokef abdo shel chabero v'asa bo melacha patur, de nichale de la nistere abde. So the father said, oh, okay, fine, I hold like a different sage, like Rav Daniel, the son of Rav Ketina, who said in the name of Rav, that if someone seizes someone else's slave and does work, he does not have to pay for that slave's work, because the master of the slave is happy that the slave's work habits won't be undone. If someone's busy, it's good for them to continue to be busy, because let's say the master doesn't have anything for the slave to do today, and the slave is going to lounge around, then he's going to get used to lounging around and lose his work habits. So actually the master is happy that someone is working his slave, and so the father here is doing that the slave owner a favor by working a slave, and therefore does not have to pay. And so me too, it's true, I'm seizing the slaves of people that owe me money, but I'm doing them a favor by keeping the slaves busy and keeping their work ethic up. Amale, hanimi lehecha de la masik bezuzeh. So Rava tells his father, no, that statement of Rav Daniel is only true if it's not a lender and a borrower, just a general person, fine. Mor kevan de masik bezuzeh mechzeke rebit. But my master, my father, right, since he owes you money, this looks like rebit. It looks like he owes you money. And then for the benefit of having that loan outstanding, you take the benefit of using his slave. So, you know, whether technically it is or not, maybe it's not deoraita, but it certainly looks like you're benefiting from a loan, and therefore it's not permitted. And Rava continues with the proof that we said before, in the name of Rav Nachman, that even though in general someone who goes in and stays in someone else's courtyard without his knowledge does not have to pay him, because the courtyard owner didn't lose anything out, nevertheless, if it's a lender and a borrower, then it becomes prohibited, right? Just because they're a lender and borrower, even though a general person would have to pay, once you're a lender and borrower relationship, then this looks like interest, and you have to pay for staying in the courtyard. And so too in this case, even if it's true that you follow Rav Daniel in general, if you take someone's slave and work and you don't have to pay, but you are a lender, so you can't do that. Amar le hadri hadribi, and Rav Yosef Bar Chama told his son, you know what, you're right, your argument makes sense. I changed my mind, and I'm not going to do that anymore. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.